Thursday, May 9th, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, if you are tired of that same old sports talk wherever it is that you live, and they keep talking about the same old subjects, they keep having the goofy callers call in that can't remember to turn down their radio for whatever reason, hang out here for a while, you're going to like it a little bit better. We talk sports with a dose of common sense. We'd rather just laugh at a lot of the sports world whenever we get the chance, because a lot of it's actually pretty funny, and I don't know why we can't just laugh at it. Hey, we are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Thursday to you. You know, it was on this day that we lost a very good basketball coach, because back on May 9th of 2009, longtime basketball coach Chuck Daly passed away due to pancreatic cancer at the age of 78. Now, when you hear the name Chuck Daly, you think of a couple things. You think of those Bad Boys Detroit Pistons teams that he coached, and they had his toughness, they had his grit. But don't forget, he did also coach maybe one of the greatest teams ever assembled when he coached that dream team Olympic team at the 92 Olympics. But here's the thing. Prior to any of that, my cousin Chuck became the head coach at the University of Pennsylvania back in 1971, and somehow Penn won 20 or more games and captured the Ivy League title in each of its first four seasons with Chuck Daly at the helm. The most successful campaign was his first in 1972 when the Quakers went 25-3 overall. They went 13-1 in conference. They advanced to the NCAA East Regional Final. Eventually, they lost to North Carolina. Hey, you can, of course, win with guys like Jordan and Bird and Magic on your dream team. A lot of coaches are going to win a number of games with people like Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars and Bill Laimbeer. But never forget this. Chuck Daly won at the University of Pennsylvania. Who wins at Penn? Who wins at a college whose mascot is a Quaker? No one. That's who, except for Chuck Daly. Hey, way to represent that Daly name, Chuck. If you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite Daly of all time. We would love to hear from you. You can email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. If you've got a question, if you've got a suggestion, maybe you have some feedback for the show, reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Also, don't forget to stop by tpublic.com and pick up some of that Chuck Daily Dose gear. I don't know if Chuck is involved in that Daily Dose gear, but either way, it's Daily Dose gear that's available at tpublic.com. We've got a number of items over there. We've got t-shirts, we've got sweatshirts, we've got hoodies, we've got coffee mugs. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com. Hey, we've got a lot to get to today. We do have a few news stories that we need to talk about. And then, as we do on a number of Thursdays, we are going to be looking at a few of the top sports media overreactions of the week. You got to trust us on this. We do have a few of those to get to this week. And let's get started in the NBA, where the weirdness with the Los Angeles Lakers continued yesterday as negotiations with potential new head coach Tyronn Lue apparently broke down, and now they say there is no deal in place. Lue and his representatives turned down the Lakers' offer on Tuesday, league sources said initially. The Lakers then offered Lue a deal in the range of 3 years and $18 million on Wednesday, but then Lue's side pulled out of the negotiations. According to a number of sources, Lue's camp wanted a 5-year deal. Now, you might hear that and think, well, that's way too much money to ask. But remember this. He is still collecting that money from the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, for not coaching their team. So he needs a deal that makes it worth it to go back to coaching, because Cleveland still owes him $10 million. Well, unless he were to take another coaching job, then they wouldn't owe him anything. So he has to get more than 10 million bucks. If you're only offering him 18, I mean, is 8 million bucks really worth going back to coaching? He can sit on the couch and get 10. So I don't know if that's worth it. And the Lakers apparently didn't want to do that. But it sounds like there is actually a little more to the story, maybe. Obviously, Tyronn Lue has been the preferred choice of LeBron James. But there are a number of people around the league saying that the Lakers didn't like the idea of hiring Tyronn Lue because it looked like LeBron James was running the show. I mean, he is, but they didn't like the way that looked. But why in the world are you worried about the optics of the situation? We all know he is running the show. So now they are saying the Los Angeles Lakers are going to kick the tires on Jason Kidd again, who they said they were actually looking at maybe to be an assistant coach to Tyronn Lue, but now maybe he'll end up getting the head coaching job after all. I do wonder if maybe the Lakers completely overestimated Tyronn Lue's desire for the job. Because remember his last season with LeBron in Cleveland? And remember, he was having all kinds of health problems. In fact, he sat out a number of games. They were wondering if he was even going to come back. And so maybe it wasn't quite as easy as it was made out to be. Maybe Lue had some issues. Apparently, having LeBron's hand inside you 24/7 and working your mouth like a puppet does come with inherent and possibly serious health risks.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Moving over to the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys front office is not going to get much of a break this offseason, and that is because they have some big contract extensions that they're hoping to get done before the start of the 2019 season, and they are pretty important extensions because they are looking at wide receiver Amari Cooper and quarterback Dak Prescott. And apparently, it doesn't sound like these negotiations are going that great. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, negotiations with Cooper have gotten off to a very slow start because they say Cooper's demands are shockingly high, which is saying a lot because the Cowboys, they say, were going into the deal thinking maybe they'd give Amari Cooper around $16 million a year. Amari Cooper is not liking that. He says he wants Odell Beckham Jr. money, which is more like $18 million a year, the highest number in the NFL by far, by wide receivers, we might add. Is Amari Cooper up in that class? That's a little bit odd to me. I'm not sure that Amari Cooper is quite that good. But then you've also got Dak Prescott, and it seems like negotiations are going pretty well with him because it sounds like the Cowboys are expecting to give him at least $30 million a year. Really? $30 million, huh? If that would happen, Dak Prescott would be up in the upper echelon of quarterbacks being paid $30 million a year, you know, right along guys like Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan. Is Dak in that class? What has Dak ever won? What has Dak ever done to get that kind of money? Those guys are like, I don't know, 25, 30 touchdowns a year, like 4,000 yards a year. What is Dak putting up that he's getting $30 million a year? I mean, I think he's a tough kid. I think he's a gritty kid. But let's be real clear. Dak Prescott is not really the drop back passer, just going to pick you apart kind of quarterback. He needs a running back. He needs a defense. He needs a really good offensive line, or else Dak Prescott probably isn't going to be doing a whole lot for your team, is he? And they're talking about paying him that much. And I know what a lot of Cowboys fans are saying. And I know what the Cowboys front office is saying. Hey, we have him. He's our guy. We have to put the money somewhere. Where else are we going to put it? Yeah, I don't know if that's ever a good idea. Just to say, well, I mean, you got to spend money. So, I mean, who cares if it's not really what we want? We're just going to spend it anyways because, I mean, we got to do it. I don't know if that's the best idea to build your franchise around. I think that's what the Cowboys are going to do. But I don't know how in the world Dak Prescott is a $30 million guy. But I will say this. If you're looking for someone to blame for why Dak Prescott is going to get $30 million, maybe you're a Cowboys fan, and you're saying, that seems insane. I mean, he's not a $30 million guy. He is not a Ben Roethlisberger. He's not an Aaron Rodgers. He certainly isn't a Russell Wilson. How is he going to get $30 million? Just blame your head coach, Jason Garrett, because he's the one that keeps having Dak pass as much as he does. This whole thing is Jason Garrett's fault. He should be taking the heat when Dak signs that huge deal. Finally, I know that supermodel Tyra Banks isn't exactly an athlete, but she just made a pretty big comeback because Sports Illustrated Swimsuit has revealed that Banks is going to be their new cover girl on this year's edition of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit issue. Yesterday morning, Sports Illustrated announced that Banks would be on the cover wearing an itty-bitty yellow string bikini. Now, Tyra Banks is 45. And I suppose it's only fitting that she gets on the cover once again, because don't forget, she was the first black woman to ever be on the cover of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Magazine solo, and she did that back in 1997. So, I mean, I guess good for Tyra, right? And here's the kind of cool part. They're saying it's not just going to be any ordinary cover. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but back in 1991, Sports Illustrated named Michael Jordan its Sportsman of the Year. And that cover actually featured a hologram card on it where you could kind of rotate the magazine and kind of turn it, and you could see MJ's head turning on the cover of your magazine. Like, it was kind of cool. Well, this year, the new Tyra Banks cover is also going to feature a hologram of Miss Banks. And when you turn it and rotate it, you will get to see a number of her multiple personalities and a few of the voices that she hears in her head. Kind of a nice touch from SI. And good job for Tyra Banks. Way to get back on the cover of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. Hey, coming back with the controversy at the Kentucky Derby and those NBA playoffs rolling along, you know we have a few sports media overreactions to get to this week. We are going to get to those right after this. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping you need to do, maybe you have a birthday coming in the month of May, and don't forget about Mother's Day in the month of May. Maybe you just want to buy something for yourself, you might as well head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. May's Loot Crate theme is now out, and it is called Nemesis. Dark forces are gathering in this month's crate. That's right. Your nemesis is here. Shake your fist dramatically at a collection of villainous pop culture gear featuring nefarious ne'er-to-do-wells. May's Loot Crate theme features items from Jaws, Ghostbusters, and many other franchises. But if those franchises maybe don't interest you, remember, you can always go over to Loot Crate. You can choose from a number of different crates. And if you have a specific franchise in mind, trust me, they probably have a crate for that franchise. You can also order a monthly subscription of crates that will arrive in your mailbox every single month, and you can always skip months if you don't like what's coming. Or you can just order individual items from whatever franchise you want, and trust me, they have just about any franchise you can think of. But the best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just make sure you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order, just as a little thank you for tuning in to the Daily Dose. So on a lot of Thursdays, we like to take a look around the sports media world and just kind of see what silly things they might be telling us. Because a lot of times, they are putting out hot takes, they are putting out some really, really interesting headlines, and sometimes we just kind of take them and go, oh, well, I guess that's fact. On Thursdays, we like to take a little bit of a closer look at these things and say, okay, does this even make any sense? I know they said it, and I know they're probably getting a ton of clicks on it, but is this something that makes any sense whatsoever? Usually it isn't, but on Thursdays, we like to dig a little bit closer and see what we can find. Got a number of sports media overreactions to get to this week. Let's get started off, and let's start off with that controversial Kentucky Derby, because here is one of the takes that we are hearing this week. They are saying, you might not have liked it, but the Kentucky Derby stewards got the right call. Yes, granted, it was after that 30-minute delay. Of course, on Saturday, we saw a big horse racing controversy, and bizarrely, it didn't involve 25 horses dying on a California racetrack. No, instead, favored horse Maximum Security easily won the Kentucky Derby. But then after the race, second place finisher Country House registered an objection that Maximum Security had veered out of the line he was running in. And then, after another 30 minutes, the race stewards disqualified the winner and gave the Derby win to Country House instead, despite the fact that Maximum Security had finished nearly two full lengths ahead of the entire field. But while it is unsatisfying, and while it might seem a little bit weird, hey, they got it right. It was the correct call. And maybe that's true. Maybe that's 100% true. Maybe they got the right call. And that is the most important thing, right? If we're going to institute these instant replays, we want to get the call right. Don't we? Yeah, I'm not so sure. I mean, picture this, because horse racing is a little bit different. Horse racing is a little bit odd. But picture this in basically any other sport. Like, let's say it's the Super Bowl. On the final play of the game, the New England Patriots score a touchdown to put them up by 10. They win the game 24-14. After the game, the confetti falls. Tom Brady hoists the trophy. But then, a few minutes later after the game, the Los Angeles Rams complained to the league that the Patriots had actually committed a penalty back at the start of the fourth quarter. So the referees, of course, go over to the hood, they duck under it, they review it, and sure enough, the Patriots actually had a clipping penalty. Not only was it illegal, it could have been a dangerous play. Granted, it wasn't a dangerous play, but it could have been. It could have really changed the outcome. It didn't, but it could have, is what I'm saying. It could have really changed some things. So then the refs come back out and change the score to 25-24, and the Los Angeles Rams are your Super Bowl champions. Hey, the refs got it right, didn't they? I mean, again, I'm not so sure that's the best thing. Yes, by the letter of the law, go ahead and disqualify the horse that easily was the fastest. I understand. It could have been dangerous, so go ahead and disqualify him. And if you're looking at it by the letter of the law, that is the accurate call. If you're looking at it by the power of the instant replay, then yes. But if you're looking at it by the power of, I don't know, common sense, then no, probably not. Because not only did those race stewards change the outcome of this race and have it be kind of bizarre, and now we all have to pretend like we didn't see what our eyes actually saw, but they also basically screwed up the entire horse racing season because no one cares about the Preakness. No one cares about the Belmont. Well done. Had Maximum Security won that race, I think everyone would be saying, hey, I don't know, he's pretty fast. He was faster than the entire field. Maybe we're looking at another Triple Crown hopeful. Instead, we're just going, yeah, I don't really care. I'm not even going to turn those races on. I mean, yes, you got it right. Did it make the most sense? Eh, we can argue that because I don't think that it did. Another hot take that is being thrown around this week is over in the NFL, and we are hearing from a couple of different media pundits that new Cleveland Browns wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. is now going to be the most difficult wide receiver in the AFC to shut down each and every week. Hey, there is no question. After being traded over from the New York Giants, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to change the look of that Browns wide receiver core. He is extremely dangerous. He's extremely athletic. He'll go get the football. He's paired up with another receiver opposite him in Jarvis Landry. Baker Mayfield's got himself a bona fide big-time target. Most dangerous wide receiver in the AFC? I mean, he's in the conversation. No question about that. But there are other wide receivers in the AFC, too. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins down at Houston, he's pretty good. So you're going to have to try to figure out a way to shut that guy down because he goes and attacks the football as well as anyone in the league, and we know Deshaun Watson, if all else fails, will throw it up to Hopkins and let him go get it. Juju Smith-Schuster, out at Pittsburgh, hey, he's going to get quite a few footballs thrown his way with Antonio Brown gone now. They're going to be throwing it his way quite a bit. I don't know, I think Smith-Schuster might be a guy to watch. Don't forget Antonio Brown. He is hoping to duplicate all of the success he had in Pittsburgh now with Oakland. You have to feel like he's going to have something to prove this year. So I think he's in the conversation. But here is maybe the most important thing for Odell Beckham Jr. and how well he's going to do this year. The team around him. I have no idea who the leading wide receiver is going to be this year for the New England Patriots. But with Tom Brady throwing him the ball? Yeah, someone out at New England is going to be really, really tough to stop. I would imagine the same will go for whichever wideout is playing in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. Probably going to be pretty tough to stop. Los Angeles Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers, he's got a few wideouts to throw to with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. Hey, I think Odell Beckham Jr. should be pretty good in Cleveland, but let's not forget dude is playing with a really young team, a really young quarterback, a really inexperienced head coach, and they have really high expectations. Oh, and they've also got a reasonably difficult schedule because they're going to be facing a number of the top defenses in the league. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong there? Oh, and also, you have a lot of really young, immature guys on this roster, including Odell Beckham Jr. So, is he going to be the toughest to stop? Maybe. Or maybe he just stops himself and you really don't have to worry about him that much after, say, week 5 or 6. I think that actually might be more accurate. Moving over to those NBA playoffs, you know we have a number of hot takes coming there, and we're getting a number thrown out about that Houston Rockets Golden State Warriors series. And one of the more popular opinions being thrown out by media members is that Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry has been struggling in this series because, hey, he now knows this is Kevin Durant's team instead of his. It used to be that Steph Curry looked around at this team and said, hey, this is my team. Everybody climb on board. Watch what I can do. It's no longer that way. KD is definitely the big dog in that locker room and on the floor now. He is putting up huge numbers every single night. Steph Curry's looking over at KD like, this might be his team now. I'm no longer the big dog. Now, whenever I take a shot, I'm worried. I mean, maybe I should have gave that shot to KD instead. He's the big dog. It was my team. Now it's not. KD's better. And I really think this is a prime example of media members digging way too deep into a story that when you actually look at it, yeah, it's not that deep. It's actually pretty shallow. Poor Steph Curry is afraid to shoot. That's what they're telling us. Because what if it doesn't go in? This is KD's team now. Yeah, I'm not buying any of this for a second. Hey, here's a theory, and I'm just going to lob this out there, and we'll see if it makes any sense. But I have a feeling I know why Steph Curry is struggling a little bit in this series. The Houston Rockets, aside from maybe James Harden, hey, they're pretty good defensively. Chris Paul, I know he hasn't looked good offensively. He can still play some pretty good defense. Eric Gordon, pretty good defensively. Chris Capella, PJ Tucker, those are all very solid defenders. Houston is making Steph Curry work for every single thing he gets. But it's not just at the defensive end. It's also at the other end because the Rockets are making Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, I might add, work very hard defensively to stop them. And then notice they don't quite have the same spring in their step when they go to the offensive end, because they're using a lot of their legs to try to play defense. I think this silly media overreaction that Steph is somehow worried about whose team it is or whatever nonsense it is, I think it's taking away some of the credit that Mike D'Antoni and those Houston Rockets actually deserve. Because I think they've actually been good through a number of these games, especially defensively. It's not a coincidence that we have seen Steph Curry and Klay Thompson struggle in this series. Houston is pretty good. Stop acting like it's some sort of psychiatric episode. Steph just doesn't know what to do. He's so unsure of himself. He's not the leader anymore. No, he's just playing a really good team. Sometimes these media guys, I think they talk themselves into their own heads a little bit too much sometimes. One other hot take coming out of that Houston Golden State series, and it seems to be circulating in a few circles, is that the Golden State Warriors are also struggling because they're just not getting the ball to Kevin Durant enough. He needs more touches. He needs more touches down the stretch, but he needs more touches throughout. He needs to get the ball up. Dude is seriously so unguardable. And again, I think when we hear this take and we continue to hear it again and again, oh yeah, I guess Kevin Durant's just not getting enough touches. Hey, Golden State, maybe you ought to give him the ball more. Maybe he ought to shoot some more. He is a really good shooter. He's almost undefendable. But again, I think we start to dismiss the defensive job that Houston is doing. But let's go ahead and look into this just a little bit closer, because we're hearing that and we're just assuming, well, I guess the media is telling us the truth. I mean, why would they make things up? So far against the Houston Rockets, Kevin Durant is averaging 25 shots per game. Now I want you to think about this. In the first round of the playoffs against the Los Angeles Clippers, Durant averaged 20 shots per game. So it's gone up a little. For the regular season, Kevin Durant took 19 shots per game. Let's see, 19 for the season, 20 against the Clippers, and now he's shooting 25 times per game against the Rockets. That's not enough. I mean, how many do you want to get him? How many shots would you be comfortable with Kevin Durant getting? 30? Do you want him to take 40? Do you want Kevin Durant to shoot the ball every single possession of the entire game? Hey, the Warriors are averaging for the Rockets series 89 shots per game. So KD is taking 28% of those shots. Hey, don't forget, there are four other guys on the floor, and one of them is actually a league MVP. Another one is actually the NBA Finals MVP, and another one is one of the deadliest shooters of all time. Now, I would say Kevin Durant is probably the single toughest player in the league to guard. I understand that. He's so big. He has range. He can handle the basketball. He can get to the hoop pretty much whenever he wants. So I understand everyone saying, hey, you've got to get Kevin Durant more shots. But I'm not sure you could just have KD shoot every single shot. He's getting a ton of shots right now. He's getting more than his share of the shots on the team right now. What really needs to happen for the Warriors, they've got to knock some shots down. And some of these other guys that are taking shots, their shooting percentage has to come up. If that happens, no one's going to be throwing out this silly take that Kevin Durant's not getting enough shots. Finally, we are hearing from a certain, how can I describe this guy? Like a screaming ESPN media sports personality, that Philadelphia 76ers head coach Brett Brown could be in serious trouble with his job if the Philadelphia 76ers end up losing to the Toronto Raptors in their current playoff series. Hey, the Sixers are down 3-2 after they took a beatdown in Game 5. But here is what that certain ESPN sports media personality had to say. So when we look at the Philadelphia 76ers, we have to pay attention to the fact that, again, it's not just about the outcome. It's how it comes about. If you lose last night's game and it's a close game and they pull away in the fourth quarter or something like that, we ain't got nothing to say. You know what? Your points are valid. Now, I might not agree with screaming on everything, but he's actually probably dead on about this. Brett Brown is having a very difficult time in this series. He is struggling to make adjustments, but not only that, he is struggling to get the Philadelphia 76ers to play hard, to play together. I understand he didn't build this roster. I get that. But you better figure out a way to get this roster to be somewhat cohesive. And again, I look at Philadelphia and I think they have a big dog in Jimmy Butler. I think they have a guy that could be a nice role player in Ben Simmons. You've obviously got another role player in Tobias Harris. You've got a shooter in JJ Redick. The biggest question for me is Joel Embiid. And I just don't know what his deal is. And I know they're just saying, hey, he's just not healthy. Is he ever healthy? If you step on the floor, I don't want to hear any more about how you're not healthy. I want to see you step up and make some plays. And maybe Brett Brown isn't the guy to get him to do that. But maybe there is someone out there that can. I don't know who it is, but they might have to find him. Or else, you know, a certain screaming ESPN sports announcer is just going to keep harping on Brett Brown. And I don't know that any of us want to hear from him all that much anyways. Hey, tomorrow on The Dose, we will, of course, be recapping the biggest stories in the world of sports. And then we will also be previewing the weekend in sports. There are going to be a few things this weekend that will be worth your time to tune in for. Plus, as we do on most Fridays, we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you. You know you've got to tune in for that. Hey, I have to say thank you all so much for listening to the Daily Dose every day. Thank you so much for the feedback. Thank you so much for the texts and the tweets. And most importantly, thank you so much for sharing the show. We appreciate that so much. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Thursday.